Hey everyone, welcome to Nonproductive. We're here in our super secret underground bunker, producing the last podcast ever for you, our lovely listeners. I'm Frank. I'm joined by Matt, James, Alan Pope, and we're talking about what we're doing during the quarantine. A user discretion, we're going to be talking about what we're all going through these days, but we're not going to be too real about it. Folks, thank you for joining me in this in as far away as possible, because that's the only way I ever want to see you guys again.
That's fair. Safe social distancing. Never see your face. That's perfect.
Yeah, this is, man, a lot of people are making the joke that this is what gamers were built for, but let's be honest, we may be better equipped than...
honestly, yeah. I mean, like, I keep on seeing a bunch of, like, on social media, people saying, hey, like, social distancing, it's going to be tough. You got to, like, it's something that needs to be done. You got to be safe. And in the meantime, I was like, oh, it's just another day for me. I don't know. But it's
booting up WoW again, you know?
Yeah.
I, you know, all kidding aside, yeah, I think everybody's got a little bit of stress involved.
Oh, yeah.
These days. But the interesting thing, you know, trying to look on the bright side and keep your sanity, is there is a strange amount of good things you can do, both good for yourself from like a mental health standpoint, and just generally good for your friends, because you can kind of join in these communal virtual experiences, like recording this podcast. So we have games, TV, movies, books. We have a bunch of stuff we want to get through. I think Pope actually made probably the most like scarily poignant thing ever in our fan club today, saying he's finally getting to that pile of games he was meaning to get to. And that's a little creepy.
I think I've played like two games already, and I just started on Neo, the first one, because the second one just came out. So I was trying to catch up.
Tell us a little bit about it. What do you like about those games so far?
I'm just a big fan of action RPGs in general. It's, you know, it's nice to put in effort and get stronger. This one is kind of a Dark Souls-esque, like, you're like, all right, cool, I think I'm doing well. Oh, wow, something popped out and killed me. All right, I guess I'll go right back. But it's very, I think in Dark Souls, I've actually never played a Dark Souls, so I can't speak to it. Like, don't you lose all your gear and you have to go find it?
Yeah, pretty much.
Luckily in this, you get to keep your gear, but you lose, like, your experience points. And then you go back and find your guardian spirit, and it re-imbues them back into you.
Oh, so that's pretty similar. What games were these again?
Neo, N-I-O-H.
What about everybody else? Any other good games going on? I took this opportunity to look up mine. I finally started, and there's like a million games I could say right now that would make everybody in the chat very happy, and everyone listening very happy, because I'm such a faker. But I finally started Journey to Psylias, otherwise known as Rough World. It's a game built in 1990 for the NES. Does anybody know this game? Anyone?
No
at all?
Idea.
No idea.
So a friend of mine recently bought a Switch, and I, because of course I'm the one walking them through this as a huge expert that I am, I say, oh, you know, you could get NES online and it gives you access to a bunch of classic Nintendo games. And they, who just bought their Switch, said, oh, does it work for the SNES too? And I'm like, I don't know, I guess maybe. They had to introduce, like, immediately it went from like, I'm the expert, let me show you, to, oh, tell me how this works. Anyways, this is for the NES, and it was a game originally designed to be the Terminator game for NES, but they lost the license in the middle of production. So I guess it's a game known entirely for its soundtrack, which is pretty awesome. And I just started it. So yeah, you know, 30 years, that's not bad.
About on average for the gamer backlog. I've had stuff that's been sitting for years. But I mean, for me personally, I have been doing catch up of my own in Final Fantasy 14. Now, normally when usually new content comes up, the first thing I do is like, oh, I do the new dungeons, the new raids, the new boss fights and whatever. And I kind of ignore all the non-combat stuff like the crafting and all the gathering activities. But due to this situation and like some new additions to like how the crafting and gathering systems were are handled, I've really gotten into the non-combat parts of the game. I'm just like spending my days either catching fish or crafting slabs of rocks for buildings. And it's very soothing.
That is the best part of those games. Yeah, just the fishing. I'm a big fan of fishing simulators.
It gets kind of addictive because like there's like a potentially like rare fish that if you use the right bait and like during the right like weather or time, you get a special notification and your little character does like the special like reeling in animation, and you get this big like box that glows up saying like you caught this rare fish, and then you get like a whole bunch of points for it. So it's kind of like fixing like a gambling addiction but with fish.
Yeah, like that. All right, anybody else got a game that they've been finally getting to?
I wish.
I finally picked up, I'm going to finish the Kingdom Hearts series. So I'm on Dream Drop Distance, I think the 13th game in the franchise.
Oh my god.
Wow.
It's actually the only one I haven't played. So I had been holding off on playing Kingdom Hearts 3 until I played Dream Drop Distance. And then a few months back, I'd started it, and I guess I'd moved through it too fast that I made it to like the next to final boss. And it's like, why can't I beat this guy? And it suggested I be level 40, and I was level 25. And I'm not 100% sure how that happens. So yeah, I've been spending a lot of time grinding and just exploring the game and having some fun with it. So that's been nice. You know, and then I just got a whole stack of them. I might boot up Persona 3. That I haven't beaten in for at all. I'd never beat Persona 4. I need to start Persona 5. I mean, it's just a long list of games. I've also been playing
Metal Gear games you bought card from me.
Oh, I do have all the Metal Gear games from Pope. That's true. I bought the remake of Tales of Vesperia a while back, and that's a game Katie and I can play together. Katie's my wife, which is actually a lot of fun. We never even got to play my favorite Tales game, which Al actually got me a copy for Christmas, gosh, 10 years ago now, that I had, because I'd lost it, Tales of the Abyss. So yeah, there's just a lot of great games. And then we've been trying to play a lot of the social games too, right? So we hosted Jackbox night last night here on Non-Pro, but I've been playing Jackbox with a bunch of other friends and preparing some virtual date nights, virtual double date nights with Jackbox. So, you know, just trying to keep busy.
That's cute.
That reminds me of a Telltale game that you bought me a couple of years ago that I've yet to touch. I think
that studio closed. You've waited so long.
No longer in business.
Is the game still accessible? Interesting.
Maybe not if you haven't downloaded it.
Yeah.
I think the problem was you bought it for me. I didn't have a computer that could run it. I honestly do believe that was the case, because it was a while ago, and I definitely have them now. I don't know if I downloaded it. Well, we'll find out. I'll try and I'll report back. So to move over, I hear a little bit of clicking and then typing, but
you can still install them. You can still install them from Steam. Good. That was what I was checking.
Excellent. All right. So to just briefly move over a little bit to tabletop role-playing games, Onyx Path, who I believe is the most recent publisher of the White Wolf, big in the 90s White Wolf role-playing game system, tabletop role-playing game, I think 2 days ago, and still now as of time of recording, released digital copies of some of their big titles. including recent, like republished, like the 20th anniversary of Werewolf and the 20th anniversary of Mage and a vampire book. And I think Changeling and Wraith are coming. These are these big, like, core books for their role playing setting in the attempt to get people to play while, you know, and I've actually a lot of the play online servers I've heard of, some that are for board games and some of them for like Roll20, for example, are being almost overwhelmed by the amount of people who are logging in to play online. And in a way, not the overwhelming part, but the fact that so many people are trying it is super cool. I really enjoy it. And it's super cool that Onyx Path did this by releasing their game for free to sort of whet people's appetite, get them involved. And also, I think, honestly, to give them something to do. That's something, James, you were mentioning in pre-production, that is something that media companies are doing, that it's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's been really interesting watching kind of the big media companies start, you know, I mean, essentially they're looking for alternate ways to get revenue, but in a way that is also beneficial to us, if that makes sense, you know, as compared to sometimes when companies do that and it's not. So like Disney released The Rise of Skywalker on digital download early, and with all the schools canceling and closing, Disney also put Frozen 2 on Disney Plus early. DreamWorks will be releasing Trolls when it comes out in April, directly to home video, as well as in theaters. If people are unable to go out, they can download it. You know, Harley Quinn's going to be coming out early. All of what's the horror studios, A24 or whatever. They're releasing all of their stuff that's currently in theaters or going straight to
the cattiness to digital. The cattiness in me wants to say, I don't know how many of these public services, but yes, okay.
But you know what I'm saying? Like they're doing a lot of people are doing a lot of different stuff. A lot of subscription services are offering, particularly learning-based subscription services are offering, you know, extended trials and extending days and things like that. Mm-hmm. It's just nice. It's, you know, it's nice to see somebody doing something.
It is really cool. And, you know, we're big fans of the little guy here in Nonpro. And Nonpro Con, and we're not the only ones who are doing things like this. All the filmmakers and musicians and artists and teachers I follow, a lot of them are doing like live streams to kind of keep people entertained and sane during the quarantine. And that's really absolutely awesome.
Yeah. There's like an exceptional amount of famous people literally like reading children's books. They're like, hey, we're famous. They'll probably listen to us for 10 minutes. So yeah, just use this and I'll read the book and you'll be right back.
Yeah. It is pretty neat. Speaking of reading, let's just transition right out. Gwen wrote a great article for our website about books that you could read in today's climate. I think there were like 15 different books she suggested. I don't know if any of us have gotten into any of them, but are there things we are reading right now that we want to share with our listeners?
So I started a book actually I got as a gift, a physical book, which I haven't had any opportunity to read any physical books in a long time. Which is Ian Colliffe, the guy who did Artemis Fowl. He published a new book for adults, essentially about an old Cajun dragon general and his adventures coming out of retirement.
That sounds so stupid, but also really good.
It's probably going to be amazing. That sort of stupid is really just the center of Ian Colliffe's brilliance. It's just like, this should be incredibly dumb, so dumb that it's just unreadable, and yet here I am laughing hysterically. So yeah, his humor, you know, at least that's how I think of his humor for children, so I'm hoping that translates pretty well to his humor for adults. I've actually never read any of his adult novels. I also finished the first book in the Witcher series, which was quite fun. And I'm about to start the second one, which the TV show had turned me on to.
Speaking of a TV show turning you onto a book, I just watched the second season of Altered Carbon, and I'm starting that series. I'm about halfway through the first book.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it's kind of pulpy, like kind of the way I would enjoy a book. I don't know if you've ever read Battle Royale, kind of just equally as gory, but also like has a lot of like that like fun base level kind of lower, easy to get into kind of writing, I guess.
So there are no like long prose, is what you're saying?
I mean, there might be an aside here or there that's a little extended, but no, it's kind of very, this is what happens. Here's a thing from my memory that reminds me of what's going on right now. Not like, very, it flows very well.
Gotcha.
And I mean, for me, I could probably get through it in like 3 sittings. I feel like I tend to be a little more intense than other people, so probably take you like a week, maybe a little less to read.
That's good. Anybody else reading anything good? Comics front? Al, you keeping up with all yours?
I am still keeping up with IDW, or at least trying to.
You don't have to sound guilty about it. This isn't a time for guilty pleasures. This is just a time for pleasures.
Yeah, so I'm still keeping up with IDW's Transformers comics. They're still pretty much as they're still kind of slow paced, but also pretty good. But I will say the Transformers Galaxy series has been really, really killing it, telling an amazing story about the Constructicons and just these kind of like sort of slow fall into like reluctant, like not necessarily reluctant, but like, well, we gotta be evil, so let's do it, kind of story. And it's really good. I was genuinely surprised considering how slow paced the official book is, that their side stories and their spotlight stories have been like really killing it. So I'm kind of hyped about that.
Nice. Did you have, they haven't released any of those crazy crossovers we've been talking about recently, right? The Ghostbusters, I think, is maybe one. And
Ghostbusters, I think, is the only one that's come out thus far. There might be another one that's like, what was it? Oh my God, we just talked about it not that long ago either.
I want to, I know My Little Pony at one point, but.
Yeah, My Little Pony's supposed to be happening, but that hasn't happened yet. That story's being written, but like, it's the same thing with Ghostbusters. It's taking place in its own continuity. But the Ghostbusters comic book is supposed to be really good. It's about like catching ghost Starscream, so there's like, there's a reason why it works.
I love it. Love it. Oh man, I can't wait.
I've still been reading, and maybe a little too on the nose. But I've been reading Robert Kirkman's other comic, Post Walking Dead, which is Oblivion, which is about a post-apocalyptic event that occurred in Philadelphia that kind of transported a portion of Philly to another world. And they've gotten to the point where they've met the people of that other world. And, you know, conflict and wacky hijinks ensue. It's very serious comic. I don't want to give people the wrong impression.
They're like, all right, yeah, wacky optics.
It's not, yeah, it's a 10th
series. Somebody's already sobbing, like ugly crying.
But it's very good. You know, Kirkman really relishes well in that, you know, kind of post-apocalyptic, big disaster sort of scenario. And, you know, it's you know, a little bit of wish fulfillment reading of not, you know, knowing that someone's at least fictional life is maybe worse than ours.
There you go. That's a bleak way of wrapping that up. I don't know. Anybody else have a read or a transition to the elephant in the room that is Peak TV? We've been talking about it for a while. Peak TV, man, it's everywhere. All these amazing programs. And not enough time to watch them. So, of course, now you have a little bit more extra time, maybe. So I'll start because we brought it up already. Witcher. I finally got 2 episodes in to the Netflix series. Mm-hmm. I don't know why I haven't looked at it. Something about it just made me feel like it was... There's a long history of video game stuff turned into motion pictures that are garbage.
Yeah.
And I thought this would be that. And I not only have I realized that it's not originally a video game, it's a book, but that it's actually pretty well done so far. The one thing I can't get through is the accents.
I feel like at least Geralt, less accents and more. It's just grunts. It's just put your whatever you're feeling in that moment. Just put that on Geralt's grunt, and it's appropriate.
Yeah, he's the least difficult to translate through the grunt. Almost everyone else is like, ooh, all the villagers are just impossible, but they luckily all end up dead often. So,
Wipe your hands. Yeah,
yeah.
I think the perfect explanation I've seen of The Witcher is like, you know, people come in expecting, you know, their Game of Thrones replacement, and they end up with the spiritual successor to like Hercules and Xena Warrior Princess, and totally okay with that. I'm totally fine with that. I didn't know it was a void I had in my life, but it was, and it filled.
Fair enough. Anybody else have some TV that they want to catch us up on, what they're catching up on?
Yeah, I got a weird one.
All right.
Love is Blind. I've been watching this very interesting, very bizarre, well, I guess not very, not too bizarre, but definitely very interesting sort of like dating show in the same sort of line as The Bachelor or Temptation Island kind of thing. So they get like a number of people, and they all have to, like, it's like six men and six women. They all have to, like, interact with each other without actually hearing or, like, without actually, sorry, seeing their faces. So it's all, like, through, like, a wall. And by the end of, like, 10 days, they have to decide if they want to marry somebody or not. And it seems really hokey, and it is. But what the show does that's brilliant is, like, as soon as they decide they're going to get married, they let you see what happens afterwards. And they spend an inordinate amount of time breaking down why their own concept doesn't work. And it's very interesting to watch because, like, it teaches you a lot about communication. And, like, yeah, love isn't necessarily blind, but also, like, there's reasons why this doesn't work outside of just, like, physical attraction and everything else. And the mystique of dating on a reality TV show. And I really like that this is the first show I've seen anyway that just decides, hey, we don't work as a concept. We're going to explain to you in detail why we don't work as a concept. I have no idea if this is getting a season two, because I have to imagine the audience would be like, well, that was terrible. But
no,
I mean, maybe
I've heard amazing things. I've heard people, like, no one's explained it to me before, but all my normal friends love the show.
Yep.
I think I've already heard about them casting second season, so
I'm into it. Like, I really want to see where the second season goes, because I feel like they did such a good job of, like, really explaining, like, a lot of things and what the failures are and why certain relationships took off and, like, why very few did. It's just like, I would love to see an even more self-aware season out of the second one, because I don't know if more of the same is going to cut it.
All right. Nice. We can't follow this up with another genre thing, or I'll make us look like we're losers. Anybody?
Oh, well, I've been diving into my HBO,
backlog. Yeah.
All right. I'm finishing up the McMillions documentary. I've got two episodes left. That's not genre and super interesting, because I feel like with McMillions, for those of you who don't know, it's about the McDonald's monopoly scandal, which I feel like I remember vaguely hearing about when, you know, they busted the whole monopoly ring back in the day, but, like, it's so much more insane than, like, I could have ever imagined.
Ooh.
So that's been a lot of fun. And then my other two things are genre. So I powered.
It doesn't matter.
Avenue.
You transitioned. It's okay. We're fine. Al can't judge us.
I powered through Avenue 5, which is the U Laurie TV show about him being a captain on a spaceship. So funny. Mm. And it's so good. I just finished the last episode yesterday when it premiered, or Sunday. When it premiered, and it's so funny. The jokes land really well. It's not super dour, despite the fact that they're in a dour situation, which makes it enjoyable as well. But it's just laugh out loud hilarious.
I don't know if you've ever seen the show. It's a British show called Red Dwarf. It was one of my favorites. It was about people. It's a Lost in Space show. I mean, you could make that almost as a subgenre, like including Lost in Space. But this was a Lost in Space comedy. I love that genre. I love the hopelessness, yet at the same time, things aren't that bad. Because they are on a luxury liner. And it's like, that is a sweet spot for me. And in this climate that we talked about this in pre-production, are you the type of person who wants to experience fun, joyful things now because you're stressed? Or are you the type of person who wants to experience awful things now because you're stressed? This is like right in the middle, right perfectly in the middle. Avenue 5, love it.
It is. It's perfectly in the middle. And then last but not least, I didn't watch the premiere of Westworld, but I did watch like a 35-minute recap on season 2 of Westworld. So who knows? Maybe I'm ready for Westworld season 3. Maybe I'm not.
Yeah, we finished. We got caught up on season 2 of Westworld, and I saw the first episode. It's pretty good. It's a great show. It's one we barely talk about, which is weird because it's right up our alley. Maybe we're afraid of what Katie has to say because I'm assuming she wants all robots to die. Just
Katie
like
is
always.
Not a fan of those robots.
James and I aren't supposed to talk about Westworld because the last time I told him, I thought the second season was better than season. I heard words out of his mouth that I, you know, never thought I would hear out of James's mouth.
Oh, goodness. The first season is so much better than the second season.
And he'll relent endlessly.
I'm assuming there was more swearing the first time around. Or else
definitely.
His eyes got a little red. He said some things that made me blush. So, you know, he was being a little serious.
I'd like to see this fight happen again in real life. Anybody else? But, Matt, Pope, yes, go on.
Well, I was taking one on the page because actually Matt and James inspired me, so I'm restarting Star Wars The Clone Wars.
Woo!
Oh, nice. 17 nice. Episodes in now, so, you know, only like 150 left to go.
I am also picking around The Clone Wars right now, which has been really interesting after reading Frank's entire tirade on the status the other day about why he still likes The Clone Wars but has issues with it. Yeah, and it's just been very fascinating, particularly any one of the, what was it, the one with the I'm going to say the monkey people, but they're kind of, you know, they're...
Oh, yeah,
they're
that's the last episode I left off on, where they're all...
Ah, perfect. So, yeah, and they're like, oh, well, we're pacifists, so we don't fight, and then the Jedi are like, that's cool, you don't have to fight, and then the one guy's like, no, we need to fight, and then, yeah, it's like... I don't know, man. It's weird. It's like World War II, and I guess the Separatists are Nazis, but maybe the Jedi
but
and, the and the Republic are Russia? I don't know.
Everybody's bad.
Yeah, in that episode, they were just going to burn an entire planet for no reason. Like, they were legitimately, like, mustache and twirling.
Like, test bombing.
You know what? I have not seen that episode, and I fully acknowledge that. But I do feel like the issue with Clone Wars is that they're like, we could kind of make this mature, but let's not try too hard. Let's not go nuts here. Because I don't think they commit to any of those things all the time. Certain episodes they do commit, or for a scene or something, but then they're like, but you know, everything goes back to normal. It's almost as if Dan Harmon wrote a war movie, or a war series, where he's like, yeah, but it's a TV show. It's got to go back to normal.
You know Harmon wrote a war sitcom. Dan Harmon's gonna update MASH. No, I'm ready for this.
Actually, that sounds amazing. but let's say Dan Harmon isn't aware he's doing it.
Okay, so Dan Harmon can't be in on the joke. That's a problem for him.
Yep. Yeah. If someone calls him once a week and says, so what about this episode? He's like, I guess we could do one, a bottle episode about Amy's boobs, and then that becomes a thing. I don't know. Sorry, go on, Bo.
Just the other show I'm watching right now, which I guess Taylor, my girlfriend, would choke me if I didn't talk about it, is Outlander.
Outlander.
Yeah, amazing show, also based on a book series, which has like 7 main books and like 4 anthologies or something like that. I'm like halfway through the first season, and if you're looking for like a lore-heavy, awesome, crazy, vaguely mystic show, but like still kind of grounded in reality, it's fun because it like starts in World War II era, and then she gets like time traveled back to like the 1740s, I think.
I was just going to mention, I've always thought about recommending Outlander as one of our late to the parties. For those of you who know us and our content, I think our most famous and our kind of premier late to the party was Battlestar Galactica. And Ronald D. Moore, the guy who, you know, was the guy behind Battlestar Galactica, this is technically his like second series he's a showrunner of. Because he didn't have a series picked up between Battlestar and Outlander. But I feel like, despite the fact that it's like maybe a different setting, I feel like it fits that awesome, like, you know, partially mystical, lore heavy, like, right up our alley sort of stuff.
I consider it. Yeah.
I can speak to it wonderfully. Taylor can tell you, like she like has hard eyes every second we're watching a show. Also, I'd say it has more sex scenes than Game of Thrones. So you're golden.
Woo! And,
all right, yeah, that's good.
Like, there's at least two people's stuff hanging out in every episode, I'd say.
So when you said Outlander, and I was like, yeah, I thought you were talking about Outsider, The Outsider, which is a show we finished on HBO. That is not the same show, and you should definitely not watch it thinking you're going to get a romantic story, because it is deeply about child murder. And it's basically Stephen King. If like, imagine Stephen King thought, man, I could do Stranger Things, and then did it. It's good, but it's difficult to watch at times in the beginning. But once you kind of muscle through what this is about, and it's almost like a thin veneer of supernaturalness happening at first over a story of a small town that goes nuts because a child ends up dead. It's horrifying, but really compelling. It's, again, if you liked Stranger Things but thought this could be worse, I think you would enjoy that show. Matt, I don't know. Do you have anything on TV that you want to, that you're watching right now that you're going through?
Yes, actually.
All right.
It kind of stinks. Well, kind of ironic that I just finished BoJack Horseman, like binging through that entire series right before all this has started.
Damn.
But now I've actually started another series I've been meaning to get into, The Good Place. Just started that. So finally going to check what this is all about. I watched, I think, like the first two or three episodes. And I'm really enjoying it so far. It's very, very funny, very charming. And in a way, kind of deals with a lot of issues that I have. So it's going to be an interesting experience. And so, like, in a way, it's similar to BoJack, where, like, it really makes me reflect and internalize, like, my thoughts and, like, who I am. So it'll be an interesting experience.
It's it is absolutely a self-reflective show. And I hope you'll enjoy it. Please check back in with us. I'm curious what you think.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And not really genre television, but the world of professional wrestling is kind of at a very strange point right now, due to like issues of like needing, like, there can't really be any crowds or gatherings. We're having these interesting things where shows are done in like empty arenas.
I've seen some of that. It's so creepy. Empty,
yeah. WrestleMania has been decided to do with like the decided to be like run in the WWE training center this year instead of like a big spectacle event. So that's going to be very interesting to see. I know as of tonight, like while we're like after we're done recording this episode, I'm going to be checking out AEW, and they're also going to be doing some kind of empty arena episode. Even like internationally, like checking out some like Japanese pro wrestling, they call it a no gate show, like nobody at the gate of the arena, literally. And it's just you see these wrestlers come in and they do, like, their usual like entrances, and they play to the crowd, but there's no audience there. So usually somebody there that's either like a commentator or like an official, they kind of play it along and they seem to have kind of like fun where if one of the wrestlers has like a big kind of like a big face speech, like asking the crowd how they're doing, like the one person in the audience will reply back. And it's interesting to watch, and it seems it's a very neat, like different look at professional wrestling, because you're so used to like crowds and audience interaction. Like that's a huge part of the enjoyment out of it. But seeing like these wrestlers get around it and just like really shows kind of like their charisma and how they can even be their over the top personalities, even if they have no one to play off of it.
When it works well, it's incredible. It's an incredible amount of like showmanship, but man, is it creepy. It is so weird sometimes.
I saw some like really funny stuff. I know for like WWE, someone like placed a Twin Peaks music over this one guy's promo, and it seemed like something straight out of the show. Another person said like watching wrestling right now on empty arenas, it's less of like a fake sporting event, more of some kind of very strange Beckett play. And it's on point, because there's a level of drama and ridiculousness to it, and just seeing like just like people going at it like so earnestly, just kind of like to complete silence. It's kind of being at the theater in a sense.
That is, yeah, I think it's very accurate, and there is a lot of that kind of. So live, like Broadway is closed, right? There are no live plays anywhere you can get. Sometimes you'll find some of them on tape or whatever. You can't reproduce a live experience. But what's weird to me is how much sporting, like how much of televised sports and sports entertainment is like powered by that live experience without you even realizing it. It's incredible to watch. Same thing is actually true of, and there probably isn't many opportunities except for maybe like a late night with Conan O'Brien. The Late Show with Steve Colbert doing an entire show in front of a not present audience. Those, if you could find them, if you could find either the WWE or AEW or this late night shows, watch them. It is the most jolly you'll ever see the, I'm putting quotes around this, apocalypse. No one ever told me it'd be this like business as usual. And it's interesting. It's very interesting, not to worry people too much. It's definitely an experience you'll want to have. All right. I think that pretty much wraps up TV. Anybody else got a show or something that they want to tell us about before we transition?
I mean, I got two more, I guess I could talk about that are on Netflix.
All right.
I like just to, since I got so like mainstream there for a minute, I'll go like kind of like kitty again and talk about some of my favorite franchises. Uh-huh. I will say Transformers Cyberverse is on Netflix.
That's and also our on YouTube. Out.
I will yeah. say it's a great show. I would say check it out. Seasons 1 and 2 free on YouTube. You should see it. Pretty good.
No, was this the one you were worried about?
This is not the Netflix official War for Cybertron Netflix yeah. show. This is one yeah. that came out for free on YouTube. It's 10-minute episodes. And it's kind of the more kid-centric cartoon, but honestly, it's really, really vibrant. The animation style is actually really good. It doesn't hold as many punches as you would think, all things considered. There are definitely some moments where characters kick it, and it's like, oh, okay, that guy's dead now. All right. It definitely gets very 86 movie on you at one point. So it's pretty good. I definitely say check it out. And also, since it's about to end when it hits its fifth season, I'd say now be the time to catch up on She-Ra, and the Princess of Power.
I've been meaning to, yeah.
I will say, man, that show, not even just as a kid show, but as a TV show, is really, really good. Like, the interpersonal relationships, the animation, the, like, cool inventive world that you get to live in, and the sort of, like, it's it's very Adventure Timey, but also like not as surreal or as goofy. It's just like we live in a magical future that we used to have a modern society that isn't here anymore. And it's very cool because of it. The villain is fantastic. Hordak, the main bad guy, is just great. He's very genre savvy, which I love in a villain. I love when a villain is genre savvy and knows like, oh no, this is how this is going to play out. And just knows when it's time to jump ship and when not to, except when inevitably all villains get overtaken by their emotions and so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's just, man, is it really good. I definitely say check that out. Oh god, cannot say enough good about those characters. And damn, just watch it, please.
For the love of god, it's almost over. Nice, very good, very, very cool. I don't know if we have much to speak of in terms of movies, unless there's a movie that you guys managed to catch up on. The last time I caught up on movies was all the DC movies recently. I don't think I'll do that again. But in the next couple of days, actually, probably the time this is posted, maybe that day, we're continuing NonProCon in an attempt to give you something interesting to do to help fill your day. And I think we're going to be doing another watch party in our fan club on Facebook. We might be doing it somewhere else. We may do it on Twitch as well. We've had some luck with Twitch so far. But we're going to be watching something together. That's right. Just like the olden days, it starts at a particular time. You could chat along with us. You maybe even interrupt with your own videos if you'd like. We're going to leave it as a surprise what we're doing. In the past, we've done some public domain movies, and we might be revisiting that. But we're gonna find something incredibly goofy, because that's another experience that feels more fun with people.
Definitely,
going,
I agree,
to a movie and watching with everyone else. So I can't wait to do that with all of you listening in the next couple of days. But I think that's it. I'm very proud of what we've done so far with NonProCon.
Yeah. Oh, actually, I do have a movie that I wanted to talk about, Frank, if you wanted to hear about it.
Sure.
Yeah. So I was sitting back and like, you know what's good to watch in times like these? Horror films, right?
Yeah.
So I watched recently Antrim, the deadliest movie ever made, which is a very fascinating film in its own way, as it had about a year and a half, if not 2 years, of marketing, where it explained itself as the movie that you would watch and then eventually die.
Okay.
I had no idea this happened.
This did happen in a viral marketing campaign about a documentary-esque kind of, or a mockumentary of, like, people who had seen the film and what happened afterwards, like, how it had gotten rejected from film festivals. It had been made and released in 1979, and it is not made in 1979. It clearly has too good a sound quality for that, but they do their damnedest to make this movie look like it was made in 1979. It has that old kind of like Texas Chainsaw, Hills Have Eyes kind of aesthetic, which makes it very like kind of cool and like, oh man, like there's like stop motion animals like for shots, just because like you can't like, because it was made on such a shoestring budget, you couldn't actually harangle animals to do this or hire a guy that could.
I've heard of the urban legend that this movie seems to be based on, and I am here for it. I'm looking it up as you're talking. This sounds really interesting.
It's
without
really
spoiling
cool.
anything. How was it?
How was it? It's very clearly kind of an ARG, like it's an alternate reality game kind of thing, like in the same vein as many other online like TV shows and stuff like that, or not TV shows, but like online web series and stuff like that. It's not that. It is an actual movie, and it does bookend the film with documentary style stuff in the beginning at the end. Both are actually really good. The movie itself, it's actually not a bad film. It's hard to explain too much about it. I liked it, but also I can understand why people would walk away being like, well, I was waiting for the shoe to drop and what happened? I can understand that complaint, but the plot of the film is essentially a brother and sister go in the middle of the woods and decide they're going to dig a hole into hell. As you do. And things just go consistently more and more wrong as the film goes on. And it does tension fantastically. I will say this about the film. Like, you like you hold your breath from the time the movie starts to like by the time it sort of stops. Like there's some really good gimmicks in that. But like, yeah, there's a lot of commentary on the aspects of storytelling, and there's a lot of meta kind of context to it. But I think the unfortunate thing that it suffers from is that, hey, we're expecting you to continue to play this game after the movie's over. And it's like, I don't got time for that, or I don't really want to do that. So, sorry.